Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Aaron Saylor to the podcast. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, Aaron, you're going to be a little bit of a different guest from our typical guest on the podcast with those that have a focus in maintenance reliability. We brought you on to talk about leadership, and that is so important to everything we try to do in a maintenance reliability or asset management program. Now, before we dive into the conversation on leadership, I want to provide a brief background on you. You're a licensed clinical social worker, and you're currently Senior Director for Child and Family Agency of Southeastern Connecticut. You have an undergrad from Old Dominion in social work, and you specialize in attachment theory. You also previously served in the U.S. Army Reserves as a medic. What did I miss from your bio that you want to fill in there?
I've been thinking a lot about that. And one thing that I learned in the Army that I think is important to note is how to be led. I think it's important to know how to follow in order to be an effective leader. And I think the Army taught me that as a medic. And then once I became a sergeant, how to lead my troops. And then the other huge piece is I think I view myself, and it's been my mantra for many years at this point, is that I'm a work in progress. I'm always learning and growing and expanding my knowledge. And I think that's also very important as a leader.
Excellent. Very good. And how long have you been involved in leadership?
So I enlisted in the Army Reserves in 97, and I became a sergeant in the Army Reserves in 1999. And then from there, I was asked to take on supervisory roles very early on in my career. So I've been in a supervisory leadership capacity for the past 16 years. And really, since 2007, have been focusing on building teams and staff development. I see it really important as a leader to train your replacement. So that's something that I've really focused my career on over the last decade or so.
Excellent. That way it enables you to move forward. You bring up other people and so on and so forth. Now, I'm sure over your experience or decade or so of experience with leadership, you have some principles that I'll say have come into place. Do you have principles?
I do. Definitely.
Now, how many of those principles do you have that you believe guide your leadership theory, your leadership standard, if you will?
I have three principles that really guide me in my work and practice and what I try to teach the staff that are working with me.
Excellent. Now, what are those three that maybe others can learn from and employ in their daily leadership routines?
So the first one is don't take down a fence until you know why that was built in the first place. And what that means is that we all come with our own defenses that have helped us survive within childhood and relationships and in life. And they're there for a reason. And sometimes they help us and sometimes they get in our way. So in order to really move a team from being willful and sort of stuck in their own ways to willing, you really need to understand what those defenses are and understand why they were put there. So to give an example, we in my agency are going through this transformation process where we're trying to increase our revenue, be more relevant in the community, be seen more. And a piece of that has been looking at productivity. We've been an agency that has led by the heart for 200 plus years. And which means that we do a lot of extra things for our staff, but that absolutely impacts in revenue. And as state dollars that have funded us for years continue to shrink with state budgets not being in a great place, especially in our state of Connecticut, we're having to look at our practices and shape them and change them. And so we have staff that are kind of resistant to us asking them to be more productive, to not do as much hand-holding with their clients as they're used to. and some staff are struggling with that. So we've had to sort of sit with them and help them understand where that came from and why we need to shift in order to for them to be move from willful to willing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So if there is, say, a clause put in a union contract at some point, you can't just go remove that clause without understanding why that was asked for, why it was negotiated for, why it was put in place, and what the impact will have if that is removed, right? You need to truly understand everything before you can just start removing things and start changing things.
The history with the agency, understand where their resistance is coming from, and then help reshape the narrative and the practice going forward. Brene Brown, who's one of my social work heroes, she has lots of different TED Talks and stuff that we listen to a lot in our work. And one of the things that she says is, only when we're brave enough to explore the darkness will we discover the infinite power of the light. So you really have to look at all facets, sort of turn over all the rocks to understand how to move forward.
Excellent. Very good. That is a great first principle. What is leadership principle number two?
So this is one that I hold near and dear to my heart, because I think we often get stuck in this place of the principle is, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good enough. And what that means is that I think we often get stuck in wanting to plan and make it perfect and really make sure we figure it out. We turned over all the rocks and we understand everything in order to, before we hit start. And it's something that I get really frustrated in my own work, where we stay in process and never actually achieve. And that's when people get frustrated. People start to lose faith in leadership when that happens. So one of the mottos that I hold in thinking about that was a definition of failure or fail, which is first attempt in learning. And that kind of transforms my way, because fear often gets in our way of being taking risk and being willing to take risk in our work. And when you sort of redefine fail as not shame or something that is a direct reflection of yourself, but just in this, I've learned something. Every time I fail, I learn something. It helps you move forward and take more risk. And I think the more risk we can take in industry, the more successful we'll be, the more innovative we'll be, the more investment we'll have in our team.
Yeah, excellent. And I know many individuals sometimes will work on developing the perfect plan, and they'll spend days, weeks, months developing that perfect plan and not actually go out and achieve the improvement, where if they just started with a rough idea and went out and started making those changes, driving those improvements, they would have saw some results already. I think it's important that, you know, people understand that perfect, it doesn't have to be perfect. We just have to start moving forward, have a plan to move forward, but, you know, good is good enough in most cases.
Well, exactly. And, you know, plan, do, study, act. So you plan for a short period of time, you do it, then you study it. And that's where you learn, and you'll find your failures, but you'll also find your successes, and you'll get even, I think, more better results if you take that risk and are willing to do that. It takes trust and faith to do that. The other thing that we're doing in our agency right now is vertical change, which is really uncomfortable for a lot of people, because basically what that means is you change multiple systems at the same time, rather than changing one thing and then waiting till that's perfect and then changing the next. And it's been, I'll admit, at times an overwhelming practice, and this resulted in a lot of meetings as a project manager for that. But we're seeing more change that's effective. Our productivity is up 118% since March. So, you know, it has, it's overwhelming, but it works. And I think their motivation is created when you see change fast, especially positive change. So, and it takes a team. You can't do anything in isolation or by yourself, right? So, another quote, I love quotes. I sort of live by quotes. And Peter Sheehan, CEO of ChangeLab, said, if you want a culture of creativity and innovation where sensible risks are embraced on both the market and individual level, start by developing an ability of managers to cultivate an openness to vulnerabilities in their team. He goes on to say that leaders don't need to know all the answers, and the mindset is actually destructive. So basically, you're never going to get perfect, and leaders have to take risk, and leaders have to be vulnerable enough to say, I messed up here. You know, we didn't hit that right, but what can we do? What did we learn? What are the lessons here?
Yeah, I think that's important to understand that not everybody has all the answers, nor should everybody have all the answers. It's got to be that collaborative team approach, using that creativity to solve problems, whether it's, you know, like your example at your agency, or whether it's trying to make an improvement in a maintenance reliability program. You need to have that creativity. You need to be able to flex and work and try things. And if you're not successful, learn from it and try again, right? That's really what needs to happen.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think as new supervisors, I know when I was a brand new supervisor, feeling really green, not really knowing what I was doing. And then my staff would come to me and ask questions and want to know answers. And I felt so intimidated, but I also felt like I had put myself in this more black and white way of thinking, because I felt like, well, they're looking to me for answers. I have to have the answers. I feel like a poser because I don't really have the answers. And I would just kind of shoot that way. And it impeded their ability to grow and learn, as well as my growth as a leader. And when I sort of let go of that and recognized that, like, that we sort of bat this around and kind of sit in the unknown, the more that my staff will learn and grow, and the better the outcomes will be for the staff, for the families that they're serving, on and on.
Excellent. No, that is very good. What is leadership principle number three?
The third principle that, you know, and it's been infused in the other two principles as we've been discussing today, is build your team and ensure that there's a clear mission and unified vision. I think oftentimes when you don't have that clear mission or vision, and there isn't good communication on your team, you end up in this place of assumptions, and that's when frustrations increase. People become, you know, morale goes down. So I think it's important to take the time to really identify what that mission and vision is, and what the strengths are on your team. Everybody has inherent strengths and potential, and you don't have to, as a leader, to be all of that, as we've said already in this conversation, that there are people that are better at the table than you in some things. And I think that's something that I've learned in my, you know, 16 years as a leader, is that I want to be humble enough to know that there are people on my team that might be better at PowerPoint than I am. They might be better at, you know, writing than I am. So if there's a grant proposal that needs to be done, I'm going to let, you know, my supervisor do that, because she's better at that than I am. And I can certainly help with the practice, with the writing and ideas, but, you know, so I think that's a huge thing, is really knowing what resources you have on the team and creating a unified vision within that, so that everybody feels invested and working towards the same common goal.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. Yes, absolutely. One of the things too with that is being able to leverage the strengths, like you said, within the group, but also providing some autonomy. Like you mentioned, oftentimes there are people with strengths that are better than the leader in a lot of different disciplines and technical activities. So let them run with that. Tell them what you need to accomplish and let them set up or come up with the plan of how we're going to get there, you know, within a certain boundary of constraints, you know, for financial or moral or whatever reasons, but allow them to operate within those outlying constraints, but develop the plan to get there. Not only does that provide empowerment and trust to your people, but it also creates a significant amount of buy-in, because now it's their solution, it's their plan, and that'll just help drive that further.
Absolutely. And I think it's also creating a culture where vulnerability is seen as a strength and courageous. I think that it's really important when you have a shame-based culture where if you make a mistake, you feel like you're going to get fired or penalized. That's when you get people really pulled in. They get very narrow lenses, and you lose that innovation and investment. So leading by example, owning your mistakes, and creating a culture where people can come and be like, so we had that deadline. Here's what we didn't miss it. Here's why, but here's how we're going to fix it. And that's what I really try to force myself to do and ask my team to do as well, is if I ever have a problem, I want to have a solution that I'm presenting to my supervisor. I don't ever want to just come with a problem. I'm always going to come with, here are three ways I think we can fix this. And that's really respected and received differently. And I think that my staff feel invested when they're able to do that as well, and feel like their approaches, their ideas have merit and are well received. And like you said, that they have autonomy to perform.
Yes, absolutely. And if you come with that approach that you just mentioned of here's the problem, but here's three solutions, you know, it creates a culture of accountability. No longer can we just say there's a problem and walk away from it. Now they actually have to come up with solutions to solve it if they're going to bring it up as a concern.
Absolutely. Right. And I think there's people will come up with different solutions than I might come up with that are actually better, or it creates a different conversation that we collectively now can come up with a solution that actually will permanently fix the problem potentially.
Yes, absolutely. That is a great another principle. What is your fourth principle of leadership?
Those three are the ones that really guide me, but some other things that I really focus on in my practice is I try to think long game. I think if you stay in the short term, you're always just putting out fires. So I always try to think four or five steps ahead, think big pictures, and be personally reflective and curious about my own reactions to things and people, as well as what other people on my team or in the industry, you know, my industry might be our funders, those kind of things that we interact with, where they might be coming from, and trying to, again, come up with those solutions and always looking to find common ground.
Excellent. Another great point. Now, what is the one thing you think makes the biggest difference in being successful as a leader?
The biggest thing I think that makes a difference is self-reflection. I think if you don't know what's driving your behavior and looking at that, and it might be related to work, it might be related to some stuff that you've got going on at home, it might be related to who knows what, you know, what's happening in the world, and you're very impacted and your anxiety spikes, whatever might be going on for you is impacting the way that you're thinking about things, the way that you, or you may just be reacting and you're not using your full brain and being logical about solutions. You might be more agitated, so it's impacting your relationships and people aren't wanting to, you know, you're noticing that people are avoiding you. So being curious about that, but also being curious in a way that doesn't increase your own shame response. Because we know that when you are in a shame-based state, that it's destructive. You can't think, because when we are shame-based, we believe that you are the problem. And when you believe you're the problem, there's a lot, it's harder to get out of that, versus there's a mistake, the process is the problem, and there's infinite number of solutions to fix this process problem. So I think analysis, you know, that's reliability engineering, right? And analyzing the problem and trying to come up with solutions to make it more effective.
Yes, absolutely. That self-reflection is important. Understanding what you're doing that is good, what you're doing that there's room for some improvement, understanding those different areas and driving your own changes to improve your leadership will also set the example for everyone else within your team. And I think that is what part of what leaders have to do, is they have to set that example, have to understand what is working, what is not working, where can I improve, and drive those changes.
Exactly. And the more control you have over that, of sort of understanding your process, you get to write the ending. I think the more that it's more automatic responses and we're not in control of, or we don't understand our behaviors and actions within the work, within the relationship, the story's being written for us. And I don't know about you, but personally, I like to be in control of my story. I like to write my own endings.
Absolutely. I definitely do too. Now, if you had a magic wand, which one of your principles would you make sure everyone uses every single day?
I would say, I think every single day would be take risks. The don't let the enemy be the perfect of the good enough. I think take risk in your work. You're worth it. your team is worth it. And that I am very comfortable with course correction. I feel like I learn a lot. That, you know, first attempt in learning fail, is a driving practice in my, or driving principle in my practice. And I think there's that it's important to just do, to not sit stuck in process.
Yeah, I have to agree. That is one that, you know, get up, try something new every day, try and drive those improvements, try and drive those changes that you're trying to make. Because if you try and theorize and plan on it every single day, all day, you'll never get anywhere. Whereas if you take that little step every single day, that little improvement, it'll add up to a lot after you get moving. You can refine right. as you go, but you do need to start.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think the other thing with that is seek feedback. I think it's important to have people on your team that you trust and that you feel safe enough to, you know, if you have a meeting that everybody was kind of staring at you as you're trying to start a new initiative or whatever, and you weren't getting the responses that you would want. What I do in my practice is go, so what was that? You know, what did you see? What was it, something that I did? Is there something that I'm missing? Did something happen before this meeting that I didn't know about? And really get that feedback from a trusted colleague.
Yes. And that's where, you know, having a coach, a mentor, and learning, some leadership principles and how you act as a leader from someone experienced can go a long way, as opposed to having to figure it out on your own. If you get that feedback, you can make those quick course corrections, which are relatively easy to do versus being way off target and having to, you know, make that massive change in the future because you weren't doing things correctly right off the bat. Feedback is critical in everything we do. And I think it's definitely important in leadership as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away regarding the conversation on these principles today?
So I think it's important to honestly evaluate your practice, really look at where are you thriving as a leader and where do you want to improve? Do that evaluation. What are your fences? Where do you get stuck? I think it's important to do that analysis. I've said that over and over again. And then again, seek feedback. You know, a personal example was I have a tendency to move fast. As you can tell, I talk kind of fast. I was told by my supervisor, who has been my supervisor for almost 13 years, and she's a wonderful, trusted friend of mine at this point. And, you know, basically she said, you move too fast. It intimidates people. They don't think they can keep up with you. It's overwhelming and it shuts down the process. And I was missing things, right? Weren't always in the best interest of the full team. They might've worked, but they didn't, there was a cost to how it was operating. You know, at first it was kind of hard to hear, I have to say. And my first reaction was kind of like, well, people just need to, you know, get on board and speed up because I'm not going to slow down. But then after thinking about it, it was like, you know what? That's not actually working for me or anybody else. And now, you know, I really consciously try to slow myself down. And if someone asks me a question, rather than just answering right away, saying, okay, let's process this, let's think about it, or saying, I don't have time right now to answer that in a thoughtful way, come back and see me and, you know, at this time and we can talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's very good. You know, understanding where you are, seeking that feedback and making those changes on it. I think that's vitally important as leaders grow. Now,
definitely.
Erin, where can people find out more about you?
I'm on LinkedIn as Erin Saylor. So that's probably the best place to find me is LinkedIn.
Okay, excellent. And I will make sure to provide a link to that in the show notes. So if people have questions, want to connect, they'll be able to reach out to you for that.
Now, sounds good.
Do you have any resources you want to share on leadership, you know, your self-awareness, seeking that feedback, those sorts of things?
Absolutely. So Brené Brown, who I referenced earlier, is really a wealth of knowledge when it comes with regards to looking at self-reflection, looking at shame and resiliency. So her book, Daring Greatly, is a great book to help with that self-reflective piece. A link to leadership. She talks a lot about leadership. She actually has leadership courses that she does with organizations. Bob Anderson from the Leadership Circle. With him, you'll do a deep dive into your own leadership practices and think beyond your own assumptions. He's a businessman, a scientist in his own right. I went to a couple of his trainings and they're wonderful. He has a book out as well. And then Dan Siegel's MindSight Institute website has rich information on neuroscience, attachment, and relationships. That's also really transformative. So if you really want to get into the science of this work and understand that in relationship to leadership, he's another good resource.
Excellent. We'll make sure to put links to all those in the show notes so people can quickly find them as well. Well, Aaron, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about leadership and what we can do as leaders to make a difference and drive changes in any organization, whether it's a maintenance reliability organization or whether it's in an organization such as your own. Thank you for taking the time today. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to future conversations.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.